It's Central Time here on the Ideas Network, and I'm Lee Rayburn in for Rob Ferret today. Coming up tonight after 6 on 1A+, several states are redistricting ahead of the midterm elections, and Republicans have raised objections in New York. Democrats objected to Alabama's new maps. In North Carolina, the state Supreme Court told Republicans to go back to the drawing board. And what about Wisconsin? That's tonight at 6 on 1A+. Now, marijuana as medicine, and Wisconsin as a relative island of marijuana prohibition. Will weed be legalized for medicinal use in our state? Right now, there are two competing proposals in the Wisconsin legislature, but does either bill have any chance of making it to the governor's desk and being signed into law? And why is Wisconsin's debate over legal access to marijuana important? Our next guest is one of the lawmakers behind the Democrats' proposal to legalize medical marijuana, and we want to hear from you as well at 1-800-642-1234. What's the most important part of this ongoing debate and discussion about legalization for you? Is it the revenue, the jobs, the medicine, the effects of decriminalization? What's been missing from this conversation as you've heard it so far? Who's been missing from this conversation, for that matter? 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Wisconsin Assemblymember Diane Hesselbein is a Democrat who represents District 79 in South Central Wisconsin, and I spoke to her earlier today about her medical marijuana bill. You have a proposal along with State Senator John Erpenbach for legalizing marijuana for medical use. What would your plan do?
My plan creates a regulated process that requires a recommendation from a treating physician with whom a patient with a debilitating condition has an established relationship. We have introduced medical cannabis legislation for years, and we're just hoping that it can really help the people in the state of Wisconsin.
Well, how does your legislation stand out from previous attempts at legalizing medical marijuana?
Well, we've had ones in the past. I know the Republicans just put one out last week. Their bill was very different than the one that Senator Erpenbach and I put out. The Republican bill adds a 10% tax, and Senator Erpenbach and I don't believe that people's medicine should be taxed. The Republican bill also doesn't allow people to legally grow small amounts of cannabis for their own medicinal use. And that really hurts our rural communities because they're going to be left out if they don't live near a dispensary. They have to travel for hours to get to one. And we've really listened to people in the state of Wisconsin that would like medical marijuana and grow their own plants safely. So our bill allows people to do that.
Is there concern about the potential for abuse or misuse of marijuana?
I don't believe so. You know, I think the state of Wisconsin is ready for marijuana, and I'll be very clear that I am in full support of Senator Agard's full legalization of marijuana. But if we can't get there yet with the Republican Party, this is a step in the right direction, and we really need to be helping those people who need it for medicinal purposes.
Yeah, State Representative Hesselbein, why is this important to you?
Well, I'm really fortunate. I am married to a veteran, and he has many friends and colleagues that have told me over the years that this legislation would help them with a lot of problems that they have that they sustained during combat and have current injuries. And to hear those stories and to hear stories of my friends and sometimes their adult children who have cancer and what legal cannabis could do to help them when they're facing such pain in their life, this just seems like a no-brainer to me.
So there is some bipartisan support in the legislature for some legalization. There are some strong polling numbers in terms of public support for it as well. And so if there is support for it, where is the holdup? Where is the pushback? Where are you finding the bumps in the road?
I've been really pleased looking at all the different polls in the state of Wisconsin throughout the years. Like in 2014, for legalizing marijuana, you know, only 41% were in favor. But in 2019, that jumped to 59% of people in the state of Wisconsin, the poll, were in favor. And I'm hopeful we can finally get there. I really do think we possibly can. But, you know, I've looked at other things that people have voted on through the years. For example, fair and nonpartisan redistricting. And it seems like, you know, overwhelmingly people in the state of Wisconsin are for nonpartisan redistricting. However, Speaker Voss is not. So that's the linchpin that we have in the state of Wisconsin. If Speaker Voss doesn't like it, it doesn't move forward. And it's extremely unfortunate that one person has that much power in the state of Wisconsin.
I understand, at least from some media reports, that Speaker Voss has given some vocal support to medical marijuana.
In 2019, he mentioned that he would be in favor of looking at it.
Okay.
So if that was 2019, it's 2022. He has a few different proposals he can look at, and we're still in session. And it is really my hope that Speaker Voss takes a look at this legislation and decides to give it a hearing, maybe even the Republican bill, too, on medical marijuana, give that a hearing, and hear from the people of Wisconsin what they want to see done with this important issue.
So what would be the next procedural step for your proposal, State Representative Hesselbein?
Well, we turned the bill in, and we wait for a number, which the speaker will be giving it a number, and then we press him on getting it a public hearing.
So,
and I think that's when we can really hear from ordinary Wisconsinites that can come forward and let us know if there are changes that need to be made to the bill, what they want to see in the bill. But for the sake of the health of the people in the state of Wisconsin, we really have to get this moving.
What's the reality of being a so-called marijuana desert surrounded by some forms of legalization on most sides?
It is so unfortunate that everyone around us pretty much has legalized marijuana. And there's certainly, you know, a lot more that have medical marijuana. Wisconsin is missing the boat, and we're missing that tax revenue for full legalization as well. It's really disappointing and disheartening because a total of 37 states, the District of Columbia, Guam, Puerto Rico, and the U.S. Virgin Islands have approved comprehensive, publicly available medical marijuana or cannabis programs. That's 37 states. They are putting people's health at the forefront, letting them get this important medical help that Wisconsin refuses to give.
Do you see any compromise between the proposal from you and State Senator Erpenbach along with the GOP bill?
Certainly my door is always open, and I'm happy to meet with Senator Falkowski at any time to talk about how maybe we can merge these two ideas into one bill that would help the state of Wisconsin.
State Representative Diane Hesselbein, thank you for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
And that was our conversation from earlier today about her proposal, along with State Senator John Erpenbach, to legalize medical marijuana in the state. Now, we're going to hear from a state marijuana policy expert about how these partisan proposals in Wisconsin's legislature stack up against what other states either have on the books or already or are looking at in their own legislatures. And we want to hear from you at 1-800-642-1234 with the calls already coming in favor or opposed. This debate's gone on for a while, and yet there seems to be some changes in attitudes and opinions. So what do you think? Do you like the sound of Representative Hesselbein's plan? 1-800-642-1234. Let's bring into the conversation now Jax James. She's the state policy manager for the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, or NORML, where she stays on top of hundreds of marijuana-related policy proposals happening around the country, working with state lawmakers as well as advocates. Jax, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you so much for having me.
So now a lot to work with in the conversation with State Representative Hesselbein. But first, to get your reaction on the two what appear to be competing proposals for legalizing medical marijuana in Wisconsin, one appears to have the support of Democrats and one of Republicans.
Well, I think that it's important to see this legislation being filed. You know, there's not a robust program for access in Wisconsin, and in fact, possession is still criminalized, so that could be putting patients in jail. So this is extremely important legislation, and I'm glad to see both parties are talking about it, and hopefully we can come to some common ground and do the most good for the most patients.
So the Democrats' version would create a medical cannabis registry under the state's Department of Health Services and let physicians prescribe it for certain patients. There's also a component for licensing folks that are part of the infrastructure, growers and sellers, but only for medical consumption. What's your take on this proposal, Jax?
Well, I mean, I think it's very targeted to help relieve the access need that many patients have. And so it's an important conversation to have. Like you mentioned, there are other legislation bills that have been authored that have to do with decriminalization, creating a regulated adult use market. And so I think while all of these are important conversations, we have to at least stop the medical discrimination and not allowing people have access to this plant.
Then the Republicans are looking for a regulatory commission that would fall under the Revenue Department. They'd allow primary care providers to prescribe it, but only in smokeless forms. Have you seen components like that move forward in other states?
Yes, you know, there are some states that have specifically banned the consumption of combusted cannabis flower, and others who have recently updated their laws to actually include and allow it. You know, combustion, a lot of the conversation has to do with, you know, exposing people to secondhand smoke. And there's some, you know, science behind those different components. And really what happens is some people need a very fast onset administration route. And if you're using oral or topical, that's going to be a slow onset. And inhaled cannabis, whether it be vaporized or combusted, is going to serve that best. And I think it's up to a doctor and a patient to decide which form of cannabis is best for the condition that they live with.
Jax James, State Policy Manager for Normal, and your calls as well at 1-800-642-1234, where Angela joins us in Baraboo this afternoon. Good afternoon, Angela.
Hi. I'm calling because I originally lived in California. The reason I'm calling is because I do believe that medical marijuana, I am in favor of it. I have seen it help people in the edible and the tincture form. I've seen people with cerebral palsy suddenly be able to move without the pain and just the palsy that comes with the disease. I've seen bipolar people suddenly be able to handle their mood swings, and they're not taking a drug that's going to have side effects like tardive dyskinesia. Also, I know that a lot of people will argue that, oh, if we approve it, it's going to be a gateway drug. The people that seek the type of high that comes from marijuana aren't generally people that are going to go to another drug. So I, again, don't feel that that's an issue. And again, recreationally, you know, that's a different argument. But medically, I have seen this work.
Angela, I appreciate that. I want to get a reaction here from Jax. And, you know, so anecdotally, Angela has seen where this has worked. So what's the pushback? Where is the, you know, Jax, where do you see the stoppage of medical marijuana in Wisconsin?
Well, you know, it can be confusing because it does make sense that this would be, you know, broadly embraced. But often we see legislators lag behind the public. So while there is, you know, overwhelming support up in the 80s, I want to say 88% of people from Wisconsin want to see a robust medical program, the legislators are lagging behind. And we see that both chambers are currently held by the Republicans with a Democratic governor. And so I think that there's going to be a lot of conversation about negotiating where this bill is going to go, because it can bring relief to a lot of people. As the caller mentioned, there's a lot of different medical uses for this plant. And the reason why is it addresses your endocannabinoid system, which has receptors in many of the different parts of your body. And so it works through that system to bring homeostasis to whatever issue you're having. And we are seeing a lot of people, especially with pain, when they have the option to use medical cannabis, they will stop or greatly decrease the amount of opioids that they're taking, which we know have damaging and harmful side effects.
We're talking with Jax James, State Policy Manager for Normal. We're looking at a couple of current proposals in the latest attempt to legalize marijuana here in Wisconsin. And we want to hear from you and what you think at 1-800-642-1234. Where do you stand on the national versus state legalization conversation? We've got a state Republican leader saying we should wait for the federal government to legalize it before taking any action at the state level. What's your reaction to that? 1-800-642-1234 to join us. Our conversation continues here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Rob Ferret, and we continue our talk with Jax James, State Policy Manager for Normal, looking at a couple of proposals for legalizing marijuana here in Wisconsin and what's going on in this space around the country. Your calls are welcome at 1-800-642-1234. Emails as well, ideas@wpr.org. And Jax, before we go back to the phones, we heard the state, our state representative, Diane Hesselbein, earlier talking about negative aspects of Wisconsin being an island when it comes to surrounding states and marijuana legalization. What's your take on what we're missing out on here in the Badger State?
Well, I mean, whenever you're wasting taxpayer funds on arresting, prosecuting, and perhaps even jailing people for possession of a plant that in other states some revenue is being made on in the adult use market, then you really have a backwards situation there. Additionally, you know, it's extremely important that this medical cannabis be available to patients. We see it in 37 other states, from very robust programs to the more limited ones. And I think that there's a way that it can be thoughtfully done for Wisconsin to make sure that it serves the patients there. And as far as, you know, the regulated adult use market, that's a conversation that definitely needs to be had, but it should not get in the way of patient access. And, you know, I wanted to also bring up taxation, which was something that the legislator mentioned. You know, patients do not pay taxes on other medications that they take. In fact, often you can take your amount of prescription, you know, spending, and you can deduct it on your tax form. So I don't think it's the right thing to make tax revenue off of, you know, patients, and rather we should focus any tax revenue through the adult regulated market.
With a complete prohibition of marijuana right now in Wisconsin, where does that stand in comparison to the other states across the country, Jax?
Well, you know, there are a few states, and most of them go through the legislative process to change their laws, who've not yet decriminalized. And in Wisconsin, you know, we do see that there is still the criminalization of it, but we do see at the local level that there have been some cities, about a dozen of them, that have chosen to take efforts to decriminalize it at their local level. So, you know, Wisconsin surprisingly is behind on the times when it comes to updating their laws regarding, you know, having this be a criminal, you know, misdemeanor instead of treating it like a civil penalty or just taxing and regulating the plant as an adult market.
Jax James, State Policy Manager for Normal, and your calls at 1-800-642-1234, where Brett in Milwaukee is standing by. Brett, good afternoon.
Hi, I was wondering if there's actually any research from other states about the use of cannabis and, like, legalization affecting alcohol usage at all. I think culturally, Wisconsinites, you know, kind of have a drinking problem. So I was wondering if legalizing a cannabis form would potentially be a less damaging form of a substance, where even in the worst case scenarios, if someone's abusing cannabis, they're potentially not committing domestic abuse at home or getting in really dangerous car accidents. That's just my comment.
I appreciate the question, Brett, especially for Wisconsin. And Angela before argued against the idea that marijuana would be a gateway drug. And Brett is suggesting that with our alcohol consumption in Wisconsin, that marijuana might provide some relief or respite. Jax, what do you know about that?
Well, there's a lot of campaigns that discuss about how cannabis is safer than alcohol or tobacco in many ways. And so it is a safer alternative in that sense, whenever we're talking about choosing to put something inside of your body. But I think that it's extremely important to note that even whenever cannabis is legalized for a regulated adult use market, there is still, you know, rules against driving under the influence. And so that will never be acceptable to do. It's all about responsible use. And just like there are drunk driving laws, driving while intoxicated should not be tolerated because we have to watch out for each other on the roads.
Do you expect any movement towards legalization, decriminalization, even just for medical marijuana at the national level anytime soon, Jax?
You know, the president has made quite a few statements and some campaign promises regarding this. We haven't seen any action on it yet, but you will note that the Safe Banking Act was included in the Compete Act and is moving on through the legislative process. So we're hopeful that at least banking can be resolved. But hopefully the president will return to this important issue and do the right thing and deschedule it at the federal level so states can continue to deal with cannabis through decriminalization and regulated markets.
Got time for one more call, and that'll be Andrew in Green Bay this afternoon. Andrew, you're on with Jax James, the state policy manager for Normal.
Hi, thanks for having me.
What do you think?
So, yeah, I'm a organic farmer. I've been farming for 5 years, taking over my parents' farm here in Green Bay. And I just want to stress the absolute importance that farmers can play in this whole wild west of not only the medical but the recreational marijuana market. You know, we as organic farmers especially see the food that we grow as medicine, and adding something like marijuana, not just CBD hemp, can be absolutely critical to it. And then not only that, looking at the hypocrisy of our Republican Congress people that always at any chance try and get behind farmers when they're presented with an opportunity to actually support us, you see what they do. They kick the can down the road and don't do anything about it.
Andrew, would you grow if you legally could?
Yeah, absolutely.
I appreciate that perspective, and we're short on time. Jax, James, we didn't even take a look at what it would do to our agrarian economy here in Wisconsin and the potential for farmers.
Well, I mean, definitely there's going to be a need for people who understand plants and how to grow things. And I think that it also tangentially brings up another important conversation. You know, the legislator's bill included home cultivation for 12 plants, you know, discussing how it can be difficult to perhaps get rural people in, but also people who maybe are lower income and cannot afford to purchase the medicine could grow their own. And so these are all extremely important attributes of a medical cannabis program, and you know, farmers play their role just like they do in the foods that we eat.
What are you looking for next, Jax?
In Wisconsin, you know, I think it's extremely important that we start with some compassionate use and stop the bleeding by decriminalizing cannabis. You know, I think this session will probably have a robust conversation about legalization, and I hope that we can see some advancement in those areas as well. So I think everyone should go to normal.org/act and make sure they participate in our action alerts in Wisconsin and also our federal action alerts to continue to push for descheduling at the federal level.
Jax, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you so much for inviting me. It was lovely.
Jax James, State Policy Director for Normal, talking about bipartisan proposals, or partisan proposals in the state legislature, rather, and the latest attempt to legalize marijuana in Wisconsin. Coming up after the news, $7 million for 30 seconds of advertisements during Sunday's Super Bowl, according to NBC, and a lot of those ads will be inviting you to gamble on the game. It will certainly look like $7 million on the TV on Sunday, but we're going to go beyond all that glitz and glamour to find out what this fast-growing business of sports gambling is doing to us. I'm Lee Rayburn, and for Rob Ferret, and you're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. It's Central Time. I'm Lee Rayburn, and for Rob Ferret today, and you're with us on the Ideas Network. Coming up, this week's edition of Food Friday will explore how air fryers, slow cookers, and pressure cookers can make life easier in the kitchen, if you do it right. First, many people tune into the Super Bowl just to watch those commercials. $7 million for 30 seconds this year, according to NBC. But this year, even more of those advertisements will be for gambling, sports gambling to be specific. Betting on the Super Bowl or any sport is now legal in over half of all U.S. states, including Wisconsin. But right now, it's only offered at one Oneida Casino in Green Bay. It's become a multi-billion dollar industry in no time, generating significant tax revenues where it's legal and also raising concerns about the harmful side of gambling addiction. We're learning more about what legal sports gambling is doing to us, and we want to hear from you and what you think at 1-800-642-1234. You gamble on sports? You win, you lose? Have you placed any bets on the Super Bowl this year? What is it? Rams are 4-point favorites, I believe, for Sunday. Do you plan to? Is it fun for you? Or do you see any problems with it? Call us, 1-800-642-1234, and join our conversation. It's 1-800-642-1234. You can always post on the Ideas Network Facebook page or email us ideas@wpr.org. Les Burnell is the national director of the nonprofit group Stop Predatory Gambling. Les, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for having me today.
Let's start with just some sense of how massive this sports betting industry has become and how quickly it's gotten there.
Yeah, it's spread now to more than 30 states in just a kind of at light speed. Every state government has no understanding of what they're legalizing here, because the end game isn't really just commercialized sports gambling. Commercialized sports gambling is just really a tool to get citizens to sign up online. what the end game here is to open up really online casino gambling into every home, every dorm room, every smartphone in a community. You know, so it's like, you know, having Las Vegas right in your bedroom. And particularly if you have kids, you know, right on their tablets and their computers, and because they're going to be the demographic most affected by this massive expansion of predatory gambling.
So you see it as a, the pathway towards a casino in every home. But how did what built that pathway? How is this possible?
Yeah, so, you know, and it's important for your listeners to understand that there was no grassroots movement for commercialized sports gambling in the United States, in Wisconsin or in any other state. This was driven by very powerful financial interests, billion-dollar financial interests, some professional sports team owners who are also billionaires, and you had public officials who were looking for more and more money to raise for public services without having to raise taxes on middle-income and upper-income folks. And so the ultimate kind of way we've raised revenue over the last, you know, 30 years in most states, including in Wisconsin, what we continue to turn to are these more and more extreme forms of commercialized gambling. And I think it's important for your listeners to understand, like when we say commercialized gambling, we're talking about when you're running gambling as a business, right? So if you and I had a friendly wager on the Super Bowl, right, we had a, you know, $20 wager, or we go golfing and, you know, we have a friendly wager on the 18th hole, those types of things. You have an office Super Bowl pool. Like those are social gambling. You know, predatory gambling is when you're running gambling as a business. And the reason why it's been illegal and for most of American history is because at its core, it's a form of financial fraud. It's a big con. And that's what separates it from other vices, even like tobacco and alcohol, is it's a financial exchange that is literally mathematically stacked against you. It's like price gouging and false advertising, both of which are illegal in Wisconsin and in most states. So you have these very powerful financial interests that stand to make billions of dollars by encouraging citizens to sign up and place wagers on sporting events relentlessly, as if you're not a sports fan anymore in Wisconsin or any other state if you don't have money on the game.
Les Burnell, our guest, the national director of the not-for-profit Stop Predatory Gambling, as you are certain to see gambling ads during the Super Bowl on Sunday, and would be interested in knowing what you think as sports gambling has taken off. At 1-800-642-1234 to join our conversation with our guest. Let's go to Pat in Three Lakes this afternoon. Pat, good afternoon. You're on Central Time.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I think sports gambling is a... It's first of all, it's addictive. Secondly, it destroys people. It destroys families. It's something that shouldn't be allowed. People can't even sit down on a Sunday afternoon and watch a football game without having a stake in it. And most of the time, the stake is going to be a losing stake. And the problem with it is that you get. Once you start to lose, you lose more and more and more because you'll never gain it back.
Pat, how do you know about the effects of gambling?
I know about it because I'm kind of a gambler. I go to Las Vegas occasionally, and I gamble. I play things that I can afford. I know how to gamble. But I do know that even Las Vegas is addictive, but at least you have to get into an airplane and fly to Las Vegas and go and play. Go to an Indian casino, it's the same thing. You have to make the effort to go in there. But when you can pick up your phone or your internet and make a bet on a football game and bet on just about anything you want to bet on, you're going to lose.
Pat, I appreciate the perspective. Addictive, destructive, and yet the question about whether or not prohibition is effective. Les?
So I think the word you use for prohibition, respectfully, is the wrong word.
Okay.
We've already been able to place sports bets amongst each other for 100 years. Like, it's not illegal for you and I to place a wager with one another. What's illegal is to run commercialized gambling as a business. Okay, to do it as a business, because it's been illegal for most of U.S. history, because it's inherently a form of consumer financial fraud, like price gouging and false advertising.
But haven't we always seen that, Les, as the house always wins? That's our understanding about gambling going into it.
That's right. And that's right. So the more you, I think Pat said it really eloquently, like this isn't about whether or not people gamble. If people want to be, you know, reckless with their money or do whatever they want to do, that's up to them. Like this is a government program in Wisconsin and in most states. Like this is only legal if you partner with state government. You and I can't go open up our own sports book. You know, it's only legal if you partner with state government and you cut in state government and give them a portion of the profits.
Then Les, as you see it, and I apologize for cutting in here, but just to be clear, as you see it, is this why some states have been eager to legalize sports betting? Is the bottom line that they see?
The state public, most public officials have become blinded by greed. This is a push by, really is one word that defines this better than anything else, and that's greed. It's the public official, it's public officials who are acting with greed. You have these billion-dollar gambling corporations who are acting out of greed. You have these, you know, massive media companies who are benefiting immensely by all the advertising, and you have these professional sports team owners who are profiting it as well. But you, the everyday citizen, like you're suffering from this. If you have kids, like kids today are growing up thinking that gambling and sports are one and the same. Like you're not a sport. You know, if you go, we actually had a young man that contacted us. He's a very successful athlete in the Northeast, and all in his locker room, you know, the kids, they're talking about, you know, the latest, you know, music hit or whatever. They're talking about what they're going to place for parlay bets that weekend on sports gambling. Their coach talks about what games he's going to bet on that weekend. I mean, that's a transformative experience for young people today. So that's why in places of the world that have experimented with this, like it's been a massive failure, particularly like the United Kingdom, where amongst all the major issues that the United Kingdom is dealing with at the moment, you know, Brexit, COVID, so on, the top five issue in the UK today is gambling reform, because they have an epidemic of child gambling because of what's happened. Those same companies now are being pushed out of the UK, and they're setting up shop and partnering with US companies like DraftKings and FanDuel and so on.
Les Burnell, our guest, national director of the nonprofit group Stop Predatory Gambling. And we're talking about sports betting this afternoon with the certainty of seeing ads during the Super Bowl on Sunday, inviting you to partake and put your money on the line. Gambling line, that is. So you can join our conversation at 1-800-642-1234. Have you gone to Wisconsin's Oneida Casino to gamble on sports? What was that like for you? Do you want to see the state legalize sports betting everywhere across the board? And would you bet on sports if you could do it legally from your home or from anywhere? Join us at 1-800-642-1234. That phone number is 1-800-642-1234. Email open as well this afternoon for you at ideas@wpr.org. Conversation continues coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn, and right now we're picking up the conversation about sports betting with Les Burnell, director of the group Stop Predatory Gambling. And we want to hear from you at 1-800-642-1234. Are you concerned about the influx of sports gambling advertising? Why or why not? And do you think sports betting should be treated differently than regular gambling? Do you think it makes sports more fun, or do you avoid gambling altogether? 1-800-642-1234 or tweet us at Central Time WPR. Les Burnell, our guest, and he joins us from Stop Predatory Gambling. And the other aspect that our caller Pat brought up before the break, Les, was that how technology has changed gambling, how it has made the opportunity for an app to put gambling in your pocket at any time and available at any time. How is that changing what we do with how we put our money down?
Yeah. So the way that these commercialized gambling operators make money and in relation to state government, because they're partners in this, is they make money by continually providing more and more access to commercialized gambling with more and more extreme forms of commercialized gambling. So it's you're getting constant access to it, you know, at more and higher price points. And so the technology now allows you, you know, like when we talk about sports gambling, it's not a traditional sports bet. Like we all think of, like, I'll pick the Packers by 3.5 over the Bears in a football game, you know, 3.5 points. Now it's like, is the next play in this game going to be a run or a pass? You know, is Steph Curry going to hit 3 3-pointers in the first quarter of this game? Like, anything you can imagine, they're encouraging you to wager. And so even when it's not a traditional U.S. sporting event, these companies like DraftKings, FanDuel, you know, MGM, like they're encouraging you to bet like on Hungarian basketball, you know, in the middle of the day, and not just on the winner, like is the score going to end is in an even or odd number? So what they're doing is feeding people constant action, you know, getting people, it's, you know, because the pursuit is, it's just, you know, you kind of have a boring day at work. Yeah. Well, look, I can bet on Hungarian basketball. Like it's, you know, look, constant action. And this is being done in partnership with these billion-dollar gambling corporations with state governments. It's America's biggest, most neglected problem. And the last thing I want to say, just so your listeners have some context for this, well, you're talking state lotteries, brick-and-mortar casinos, and now online gambling, sports gambling. Like, commercialized gambling is the public voice of American government today to most citizens. It's what we advertise to the American people, including the citizens of Wisconsin, more than what we advertise anything else. And two-thirds of the public doesn't gamble at all. So like when we talk about inequality, wealth inequality, and you know, we need to, you know, need to raise the minimum wage and tax billionaires and all these other important issues that people are debating, like this is exhibit A. Like, you know, this issue affects all that. Over the next 8 years, the American people are going to lose more than $1 trillion of personal wealth to government-sanctioned gambling. And that's according to The Economist, you know, and from a couple of years ago, they had we are currently losing $120 billion a year already to commercialized gambling of our personal wealth. It's America's biggest, most neglected problem.
Les Burnell, our guest, National Director of Stop Predatory Gambling, and your calls as we continue at 1-800-642-1234, where Andrew in Minnesota is standing by. Andrew, good afternoon.
Yeah, good afternoon to you both. So, disclaimer, I am in no way advocating that anybody go gamble on account of, I'm not about it. I certainly work too hard for my money to give it away to other people, right? Or at least for the sake of trying to increase my wealth. But I heard you say earlier that commercializing or a business, if it's like a private citizen for who's trying to run a gambling operation, you refer to it as like a con and also a fraud. Now, as I understand it, if somebody is going to a bookie and they are placing a bet, they are aware of the odds, even though they are not always, they're always favorable to the house, right? But they're fully aware of that. So I don't understand in what way it is considered a fraud or a con. And I was hoping you could elaborate on that.
Andrew, okay. Thank you. Les?
So when whether it's a state lottery, a brick and mortar casino, and now sports gambling, it is absolutely a con. It's not marketed as, no, they don't put, hey, your chances of losing this money is almost 100% certain. Like when you, if you and I were to place a friendly wager with each other, you know, that's one thing. But when you bet against the house, it is absolutely a mathematical certainty that the longer you participate in it, you are going to lose all your money. So when you watch these advertisements on during football games or basketball games, like they're not saying, you know, you're guaranteed to lose your money. They're saying this is where the winners bet. You know, this is your chance, you know, to get this huge jackpot. Get this $2,000 risk-free bet by signing up. You know, like it, the whole thing is a con. And it's important to note, commercialized gambling, because it's organized or led by the state governments in our country, they're exempt from truth and advertising regulations under the Federal Trade Commission. They're the only business in America that's exempt from these rules.
I am glad you brought this up, because I would be curious to hear from you about ideas on ad regulation or rules on commercials that may be similar to alcohol and tobacco that we've seen in the not so recent past. Les?
Yeah, at a bare minimum, the requirement should be for any state is to have the same restrictions on commercialized gambling advertising that we do for tobacco. You know, many of your listeners will know that in 2013, the American Psychological Association released its DSM-5, which is like this manual for, you know, public health, and insurance companies use it to dictate, you know, coverages and that type of stuff. They labeled gambling addiction an addiction like being addicted to cocaine, heroin, opioids. Okay, we don't promote those relentlessly on television. Like those are, you know, this idea that we're promoting a highly addictive product like this, exempt from truth and advertising regulations. The only reason why it happens is because the states are using this as a revenue source. You know, it's the ultimate budget gimmick. And it's time that Wisconsin and other states, you know, we started relying on real taxation, not budget gimmicks that hurt the American people like predatory gambling does.
Let's return to your calls now at 1-800-642-1234, where Karen in Jefferson is standing by. Karen, good afternoon. You're on the air with Les Burnell.
Well, hello, gentlemen. I'm calling to ask, Wisconsin is a community property state. Is the wife liable for the husband's secret sports gambling debts?
Interesting question. Les, would you know the answer to that?
Well, I'll say I don't know exactly how Wisconsin defines community property, but I do know, let's say we have, you know, if I have a, you know, my wife and I share the credit card together and I go out and I drop, you know, have $10,000 or $20,000 of credit card debt, you know, that I've lost on, you know, online gambling casinos sponsored by Wisconsin or any other state, like, I'm still liable for that debt. My wife's liable for that, those expenses. If she goes out and if I go out and borrow money on my, if I have a home and I take a home equity line of credit to pay off my debts to the local casino, like she owes that money. Like, you know, so that's money that's on our total debt. So when we say community property, I have to say, I don't know exactly how Wisconsin defines that, but in every other state, you know, you have many people who have been foreclosed on or have liens on their homes because of commercialized gambling debt. You know, that essentially state governments have endorsed, allowed it to happen.
Let's go to Rick in Belleville this afternoon. Rick, you are on the air with Les Burnell, the national director from Stop Predatory Gambling.
Hey, Les. In reference to that other question that previous caller to the young lady that was just on, if you could explain how this works and why, if you continue to gamble at these places, you will always lose your money. For example, if I bet a friend $10 on, say, a Packers game or a Brewers game, and one of us loses, that $20 or that $10 still is maintained. What happens in any kind of organized gambling, there's a percentage of that money, probably around 4 or 5%, that's taken off the top by law. And so, in other words, that money then is being diluted or being removed by the owners of the gambling operation, and therefore it's guaranteed that if you continue to wager, you will always lose because of that guaranteed percentage that they can take off of every dollar that's gambled. I think if people understood that, it'd probably be helpful.
You explained it perfectly. You really did well. And I think it's important, carrying on to that distinction, because some of your listeners may be like, well, you know, because the gambling operators will say, oh, it's like the stock market. The stock market's gambling. And I will say, the point I'll concede on that is, if you're a day trader or you're buying derivatives, yes, that's gambling. But if you're buying a stock, if you're putting money into a Standard & Poor's 500 index fund, and you keep it there for 20 or 30 years, like, you know, you put $1,000 into that or $6,000 into a Roth IRA annually, yeah, like that money's going to grow over 20 or 30 years.
Les,
you take that $1,000 and put it onto a, you know, into sports bets or $30 scratch tickets or your slot machines, like you're going to lose everything. You know, there's a difference between investing and speculation. You know, and I think that's an important distinction. I think the gentleman really explained it very well. So thank you for that.
Finally, Les, this afternoon, if I or someone I know is struggling with gambling addiction, what kind of resources are available to help?
Sadly, there's not a lot of great resources in Wisconsin and elsewhere for people who are suffering from addiction. But there is a problem gambling council in Wisconsin that, you know, has a 1-800 number there. It's called the Wisconsin Problem Gambling Council. There's a number called 1-800-GAMBLER. I mean, I don't usually, you know, the problem is from a public health perspective, the gambling industry funds almost all of the research as well as the treatment in our country on this issue. So that's part of the deal. The business model in commercialized gambling, 50% of the gambling profits come from people who are addicted to gambling. So that's part of that's a whole nother show for you. But this idea of, you know, we got to separate these problem gambling councils from gambling funding, including in Wisconsin. But in the short term, that's your solution, is to call the Wisconsin Problem Gambling Council.
It's 1-800-GAMBLING. Les, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you.
It's Les Burnell. He is the national director of the nonprofit group Stop Predatory Gambling. And you can continue this conversation on the Ideas Network Facebook page. You can email us ideas@wpr.org, because we've been talking about the growth of sports betting and its impact on our economy and our lives. And we'll be seeing it if we have our TV on at any point on Sunday for the big game. So, with a big game in mind, coming up after the news, it's Food Friday, and we're air frying and we're slow cooking and pressure cooking our way through some easy and delicious recipes. If you've got some favorites, you'd like to share them, because for some, our repertoire runs pretty thin when it comes to these fancy home appliances. What do you do with them? We'll find out with our guest, James Shend, after the news. I'm Lee Rabernan for Rob Ferret, and you're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network.